Chi nasce la verbena.
At the height of the coronavirus pandemic, this is the sound that went viral. This is neighbors in Siena, Italy, at home alone, but singing to each other across the street. I'm Anne Strandchamps. It's to the best of our knowledge. You know, music has been one of the few silver linings during this whole horrible experience. Live stream concerts, rooftop sing-alongs. People all over the world are finding new ways to make music together, even under community lockdowns. It's almost like we need to sing.
Singing is something that the body does, and we don't have a way to be with each other in our bodies right now. And that's a profound loss, I think.
Lisa Bialava is an award-winning composer and soprano. She's been inspired by the coronavirus crisis to create something new.
It was the result of a private brainstorm that had to do with how to build community in this particular situation. I mean, for me personally, I live by myself. I live a block away from the largest hospital complex in Upper Manhattan, and I don't have access to other people. And I know that there are many others in the same situation. I started getting sort of texts from various friends and colleagues that I thought, wow, this is really so beautiful. I want to set this to music.
The piece is called Broadcast from Home. It's a large-scale, crowdsourced composition based on testimonies that Lisa collects online. She sets them to music and then gets people to sing and record them from their homes.
Part of what I'm doing, of course, is listening to the voices of people singing in their homes. Every morning I wake up, it's like Christmas.
Your entire process for this work is collaborative in a way I've never really heard of. Could you just walk us through the different stages?
Sure. Well, I mean, the very first thing that happens is that people go to the website and you can share your testimony there and you can type it in, you can upload a document, you can speak it in and upload a sound document or a video. Mm-hmm. And then I write these small phrases.
But this isn't finished music. These are little musical thoughts.
Right, right. Like, more than a week. And that's it.
And so then somebody listening can just sing more than a week back to you.
Exactly. If that weren't from chapter one, I could have like used your phrase just now.
And then you layer people's voices.
I do.
So when we hear the final work, it's not just you singing.
Oh, no. I've already had like 50 people involved or something.
So anyone listening right now.
Anyone listening right now.
Can become part of this new work.
That's right.
Okay, this one you can sing on any note at all. And the words you're going to sing in this rhythm. That other you still exists.
The very first broadcast from home was actually a text that I got from somebody that I know.
What was the text?
It was a woman who was basically talking about how she's wondering, like, why am I not reading or doing music, or why am I not cleaning closets? All those indoor things I love to do. How come I'm not, you know?
After more than a week.
It's been more than a week. I'm at sixes and sevens. She described, I didn't set this text, but she described sort of like laying in bed for a whole day. And she was basically saying, you know, that other you still exists. It's not forever. Just give in. Chapter one, that other you still exists.
That other you still exists.
That is just haunting.
Thank you. The thing that strikes me about these testimonies is that each week there's a different kind of a distilled kind of emotional state that many people must be feeling.
So you're kind of channeling and giving voice to emotions, collective emotions.
Yes.
How have those emotions shifted as the pandemic has gone on?
Well, it's already shifted. You know, chapter one was that I just described and that you just heard, that had to do with sort of surreality and just sort of the lurching, just shifting gears. By chapter two, there are already people who have, that I know, I have already lost somebody.
Small, small, even tiny, powerful.
So the second one, Tiny Powerful, is dedicated to this friend of mine that I hadn't seen for years that I learned had passed away. And I'm starting to see that in the testimonies. I mean, the text is somebody who lost her own parents years ago. She's remembering what it was like to be with her loved ones when they were terminally ill, and is meditating on the fact that families can't be with their loved ones. And it's just so touching. But there were parts of her testimony that I couldn't set because they were too searing.
Very slightly hard to listen to, I found.
Yeah, I understand, yeah.
I also feel guilty about saying that.
It was hard to work on.
Yeah?
It was hard to work on. I mean, I guess... maybe for me, I felt that what I was doing with the second one was I was meditating on these things that families can't do for their loved ones as a way to sort of re-offer those things into the collective imagination. Right now, I'm working on chapter three, which you can't hear yet, but it's kind of caustic and sort of disgruntled. It's actually kind of funny. That's coming in, too.
What would you say the mood is now?
Well, you know, obviously there are always concurrent moods.
Mm-hmm.
But I found in three or four of these testimonies, I found people who were just irritable. And I feel it when I go grocery shopping, too. People snapping at each other because they're standing 5.5 feet away and not 6 feet. It's actually probably fear that we're feeling, right? But people are irritable, and it's kind of funny, you know? Like, it's just like people trying to make sense of how just bizarre things are now.
Mm.
On this one, you can sing any of these phrases very fast on any note you want, or you can add your own disgruntled phrase, something like this. I'm annoyed that all the rich people have left.
I'm annoyed that all the rich people have left. They should have to suffer here with the rest of us.
Why
are people hoarding and wasting? Careless people in their 20s and 30s aren't wearing masks and won't stand far enough away.
It's just like, that's a mood too. This is how we can minister to our communities.
Can you tell me more about that? In what way music for you is a ministry?
Yeah. Composers from, you know, at all times would have felt this way. This is what we do. We spend our whole life learning to do these things. it has to do with honoring. That's what it feels like. I feel like I'm honoring people's experiences right now.
Sounds like a form of prayer, almost as though we're listening to many, many people's most private, most intimate prayers.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm listening and I'm humbled. It's very tender to be seeing all of these beautiful, lovely voices, so many different kinds of voices, different ages. I can tell in the grain of these voices, I can tell that some people are quite old, some people are quite young. I see that they're coming in from South America, from Kenya, from the UK. You know, I can hear the accents in their voices when they're singing the words.
I guess I'm wondering, does it make people feel worse to listen to music that's filled with grief, or is there something actually healing about that?
Look, it's true that it could be quite painful to sit with one's pain in a musical, painful, grieving space. It's also true, I know for me, that I find it quite painful to talk to people or to have interactions with people that feel fake and that don't have the depth of experience that we're all going through. Yeah. I really can't kind of just pretend this isn't happening as an artist or as a person. Maybe some people can, I don't know. And maybe I can sometimes, but I can't all the time. I want this project to be able to go wherever we're going, no matter how difficult that is.
So far, this is a work in progress. How will you know when it's finished?
Well, that's, you know, one could ask the same question, like, when will we know we can go back to normal life, you know?
Do you anticipate someday hearing it performed in public?
Yes, I do. But one of the things I've decided is that even when it is performed in public, I want to make sure that it's not just voices singing the parts that were originally sung by people at home. I want there to be actual, authentic, recorded voices blended in with live performance. It is an archive.
Yeah.
It's an archive.
This phrase you can sing in either octave.
Lisa Bialava is an award-winning composer and vocalist. Her new work about the coronavirus is called Broadcast from Home. And if you would like to sing a melody for it or write a testimony, Lisa is welcoming TT Book listeners to join. Go to ttbook.org for instructions. We've been digging through our own music archives this week, and we found some wonderful in-studio performances and interviews. Reminded us that there is nothing like being there for a performance. I'm sure concerts and music festivals will be back at some point, but for many of us, never again to be taken for granted. In the meantime, from the TT Book Studios in 2005, here's the Finnish a cappella group, Fartinia.
Is there one more song you could do for us before you go?
Yeah, what should we do about Aitara? Yes, we are singing a song about washing clothes. Those days when we didn't have washing machines. This is called Aitara.
Oitara, Aitara, lähtä liikat laiturille. Oitara, Aitara, lähtä liikat laiturille. Oitara, Aitara, liinat huivit liottaa. Oitara, Aitara, liinat huivit liottaa. Oitara, Aitara, parrat paijat pesemään. Oitara, Aitara, pyykit pyöritellään. Oitara, Aitara, liinat liotellaan. Oitara, Aitara, suopa silotellaan. Oitara, Aitara, vesi valutellaan. Oitara, Aitara, Oitara, Aitara, Oitara, Aitara, Oitara, Aitara, Oitara, Aitara, Oitara, Aitara, Oitara, Aitara. Kun on liinat liotettu,
Thank you. That was wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's the Finnish a cappella group Vartinia. Coming up, more music recorded live from the TT Book Studios. Country music, jazz, beatboxing, and stuff I can't even begin to describe. Like the sounds of Bobby McFerrin's own body. I'm Ann Strangechamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRX. So we made a house concert for you this week, featuring interviews and performances recorded live in our studios. An obvious choice was Steve's interview with the great Bobby McFerrin. He's famous for his smash hit, Don't Worry, Be Happy. But McFerrin has done a lot more than that. Here's a snippet from where he and Steve are talking about an 8-year project he just finished called Vocabularies.
Now, I'm curious, when you look back over your career, and as you were starting out, was there a breakthrough moment for you when you felt like you found your voice, you found your distinctive way of making music?
Well, the divinely appointed moment for me to discover that I was a singer, I don't think it could have happened any earlier or later. I think that on July the 11th, 1977, I remember the day, I remember where I was, I remember the weather. It was a sunny, sunny day. I remember deciding I'm a singer, and it's a 25-minute walk from school to my home, and by the time I get home, I'm convinced that I'm a singer. I don't know how these happen, but I'm sure the angels in heaven were clapping their hands because I finally figured it out. I called up the Hilton Hotel, and the manager, who was never, ever there, picked up the phone, and I had an audition. He said, well, come down tomorrow, and so I went the next day and sang 5 songs because I only knew 5 songs. You Are the Sunshine of My Life was one of them. And another tune was, Come Down Off Your Throne and Leave Your Body Alone. But a tune by a group called Blind Faith with Eric Clapton. And I sang 3 others. I don't remember what they were. Oh, a tune called Opportunity. Ba-dee-doo-dee-doo-dee. Opportunity came to my door. By Joan Armatrading and 2 others. And he hired me. And I started working a month later. And that was my first gig, was a piano bar gig. And I did that for about 1.5 years. Hmm.
That's extraordinary. You know? I mean, to hear that it was, that you can pinpoint the day. I mean, it's sort of like the day that was to some degree going to set the rest of your life ahead of you.
Yeah, it was. It was indeed.
I mean, not many people can say that their their life sort of changed on a particular day.
Yeah, so July the 11th is, you know, like a birthday to me.
That's 10-time Grammy Award-winning jazz vocalist Bobby McFerrin talking about Vocabularies with Steve Paulson. And hey, if you want to hear the full interview, we've got it online at ttbook.org. And now, another vocal virtuoso,
Hello there, everybody. This is Moken, and right now we're going to play Unla from Missing Chapters.
This guy's name is Mokin. He's from Cameroon. He's a musical storyteller with a voice like nothing you have ever heard. Charles Monroe Kane sat down with him earlier this year to talk about his new album, Missing Chapters, and to hear some music.
Una. Una. Three very old village fishermen had gone fishing, and they caught all the big fishes, but decided to sell it to the neighborhood richer village beside a stream by the river. They didn't come back. Six strong, hearty boys and the hungry village standing beside them, waiting, watching. Six strong, hearty boys. Everybody's waiting, wondering.
What am I listening to? Is this traditional Cameroonian Makossa music? Is this jazz? Is this Afrobeat? I mean, is it something else? Is it experimental? I mean, what kind of music is this?
The bass foundation that is the bed of the song is the African rhythm.
Right.
You know, I'm fusing it with influences from Take Five. I'm fusing it with some kind of ballad.
Was there a time in your life, young man, where you're like, okay, here's some different tribal music, here's Afrobeat, here's some French music, here's some Motown from America. It's like, I'm going to put all this together. No one else is doing that around you, I assume.
No, not really. I love almost everything. When I go to a Makossa party, I know that I'm just going to go enjoy my Makossa bed. You find me the next Saturday nightclub, I'm going to the nightclub to listen to Bob Marley, to listen to James Brown. Then when I came to Detroit, there was a season that I only listened to rock and roll, classic rock. For some reason, I'm some kind of like a human music recorder. You know, I record those things and they store inside me. And every song demands which aspect of those influences will come out.
Oh, interesting. So wait a minute, you're running around basically the world, soaking up as a recorder all the different music, and you're bouncing around. There's a lot of music out there. Did you hit a genre and you're like, no, that sucked, I'm not going to include that in my recording?
I don't think, that's a good question. I don't think you'll be surprised that there was a season that I was only listening to Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton.
Oh, there you go. Then you're proving you're listening to it all. If you bring Kenny Rogers into the story, then you listen to everything, I will tell you. The influences of the gambler on the music, we'll have to talk about that later. And that's a long discussion over a couple drinks, I think. So you're a young man. You're from the Bassa tribe, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are there animosities? Like, if you're Bassa and there's traditional music from there, like, and everyone can hear a Makossa, are you allowed to play anything you want? Or is there some people looking down on you and saying, hey, man, you know, that's not appropriate to play that?
I am almost not happy with typical Cameroonians, because I picture Cameroonians, those typical Cameroonians who are so narrow-minded, who only want to listen to Makossa. I picture them like a family sitting in a living room and there's a library shelf with the best new books and nobody's touching that book.
Hmm.
And they're only stuck with the kindergarten book that everybody's familiar with. But I think there'll come a time, maybe even from now on, from this show, from TD Book, Cameroonians are gonna, they're gonna open their eyes and say, wow, they're gonna end up listening to my first album and this album. Then they're gonna see those pint of high life, those little pint of Manu Dibango influences. Then they're gonna embrace it. That's why my music is more embraced right now here in America. And,
right.
You know, it's going gradually into Canada and UK.
I want to talk about your voice, not like in a metaphor, your voice. I mean, like literally your voice. It is so unique. I listen to both your albums and it's just insane. You talk, sing, you use falsetto, your baritone, you employ vocal fry, you chant, you tell stories, you warble. I mean, you scream and cry. Like, do you see your voice as a weapon or is that meant to seduce us?
Oh, thank you. I see my voice as a serious harmonic weapon. I think the voice is more powerful than a bullet.
Well, who taught you to do this?
Nat King Cole taught me how to do this. Frank Sinatra taught me how to do this. Van Morrison taught me through their music. Paul McCartney, yesterday. So I'm like, wow. So it would be cool if when I'm singing a song, just as I'm feeling, if the feeling is very low, I take my voice low. If the feeling is high, I take high. If the feeling is just midway, I take it midway. If there's a part in the song where I want to surprise everybody, I just laugh or I, you know, it's a part of the song I want to be funny. So I notice that it's all working.
Right.
So,
hey, wait. I have a question. I'm hearing you talk about they're combining all this. So 30 seconds. Give me 30 seconds. Take us on a journey of the range of your voice. Like, kind of give us an example.
You know, darling. Tell me. Okay, let me start with this song. Pretend you're happy when you blow. It isn't very hard to do. Darling, you are always needed. On your tenderness. Sherry. Lamabong. Bésame mucho. Bésame. Sherry, si tu meme. For us, the pride of moi. Chaque jour. Sherry, see to mommy, if for us a pride of moi. I love you, girl. I really want you, girl. You know, one day you will come in my life. I'll be hugging you, I'll be holding you, I'll be walking with you, I'll be walking with you. Shall we? All right, now. Just smoking.
Dude, I got to tell you, man, I'm going to clap for you for a second. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Charles.
If I could wake up to that, then I would know the possibilities of my day, right? I could do everything I wanted. Hey, I'm going to have you play one more song for us to go out on, but I want to ask you a question before we do.
Yeah.
I was reading a bunch of reviews of your albums from all over the world, and I was reading reviews, and everyone bends over backwards to describe your music by comparing you to someone else. Let me give you the names, how people compared you. Van Morrison, Bob Marley, Miriam Makeba, and many, many times Nina Simone. That is a hell of a list. Who do you say you are?
I'm not any of them. I am Moken. I'm not any of them. I believe that I am the next kind of Bob Marley, but not a Bob Marley. I'm Moken. You know, I'm not any of them. If I identify only one of them, then I'm going to lose myself. I am me. But I thank their spirit for really creating me, creating my voice.
Well, Moken, why don't you take us out with one more song?
Okay. This is Sing the Song.
Mokeen, playing from his album Missing Chapters. Charles Monroe Kane sat down with him. We're sampling music recorded live in our studios this hour, and there's more. We put together a playlist of all the songs played live in our studios over the years. It's a pretty eclectic mix. Listen at ttbook.org and share. And then, I don't know, maybe listen again. I'm Ann Strange Champs. This is To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRX. We're back to our favorite music interviews recorded live in our studios. One of Charles's favorites was with country music star Brandi Clark. Brandy and Charles had a similar kind of upbringing, and he felt a really strong connection with her album Big Day in a Small Town.
For me, I sat down. I have a screened-in back porch where I live, and I have a record player out there, which is great. And I played your entire album without stopping. I was by myself, laid down, had some cocktails, sat there by myself, and I was really struck about women. True tales of the idea of what it's like to be a woman, not a woman who's in conflict with a man or who wants to get a man back or who's smashing up a pickup truck, she's pissed off at a man. But the voices of real women, that to me was unique.
Wow. Well, I guess that means there's a lane for it then, you know? Yeah, I think what happens to me a lot is when I play live, and it's always the highest compliment, is a woman or multiple women will come up to me and say, wow, how did you get a hold of my diary? And that makes me feel good, because even though those stories maybe aren't being heard, it doesn't mean they're not happening and that they don't need to be told and heard. And for them to be heard, they have to be told first. And so I'm trying to tell those stories for those people who aren't singers and writers. That's not their gift. You know, they're getting through life doing something else, but they like to turn on music and feel like somebody understands them.
These women on your albums, you know, the bored housewife getting high, a jilted lover, the aging homecoming queen, the hairdresser, which I found amazing, the woman with three kids and no husband. Do you know these women?
A lot of them. You know, you mentioned the hairdresser. My hairdresser's named Sherry, and she was sort of the inspiration for the beginning of that song Soap Opera, because she knows more about me than almost anybody. You know, your hairdresser's sort of like your therapist in that you can tell them a lot of things. And three kids, no husband, I think everybody knows that person. And that song in particular, that hits people a lot harder than I ever really thought it would. I underestimated the power in that song.
When she smokes the cigarette on the porch, when she has a moment break on that song, I cried. Because I totally get it. You know, I can imagine what that moment is like for her. I'm married, and I'm stressed out, and I'm trying to help my kids with their homework and all these things. And I'm like, my God, I only have two kids. She has three. And she's on her own, and I just think about her smoking that cigarette. I feel for her. Can you play that one for us?
You bet. I'd love to.
All right.
She's got three kids, no husband, and she's 2 weeks late on last month's rent. She's waiting on the child support, and he keeps swearing that it's coming. But if she knows him, she knows where it went. And that pile of bills ain't gonna pay themselves. It's been a 40-hour week, and it's only Tuesday, and there's homework and dinner. Somebody wants a lullaby. Somebody wants a different channel. Somebody's dealing with their first heartbreak. And the dishes in the sink ain't gonna wash themselves. She lights a cigarette out on the balcony. When she gets a couple minutes to herself, there's how you plan it out and how it turns out to be. And a broken home, it ain't no fairy tale. She's got three kids, no husband, and a hairnet job at a diner. She knows damn well she don't make the best cup of coffee, but she's quick with a smile and good with names. And those lunch tickets ain't gonna tip themselves. She smokes a cigarette out by the loading dock and tries not to pick the polish off her nails. She thinks about a guy who's been coming in a lot. She starts to dream and then she stops herself. She's
got three kids, no husband, so she's a mom and a dad and a taxi driver. When the baby's sick, she's an up all nighter, a hand and a shoulder and a referee, a real life hero if you ask me, 'cause those kids ain't gonna raise themselves.
Wow, that song is incredible. Three kids and no husband. How do you relate to that song?
I grew up, probably most people would consider it poor. I didn't, because I didn't know any different. We always had whatever we needed, my brother and I, and my parents really sacrificed a lot to make sure we also had what we wanted. And I didn't grow up around anybody who had money. Everybody was sort of in the same boat. And so there wasn't a class system in that way in my hometown. When I moved to Nashville, I definitely saw, oh, wow, there are some people who grew up in mansions as opposed to, you know, like a mobile home. When I write or sing about that, it's not because I think, oh, it'd be cool to write a song about people who are living week to week, you know? I mean, that's still me in a lot of ways. And so I understand that struggle.
When you travel around and sing in these places and go back to your hometown, what do you see?
Well, you know, it does feel like sometimes that, you know, small town America is really struggling financially. I don't think they're struggling otherwise. I mean, I think small towns will always be the heartbeat of this country. I just think whenever there's a recession or something that hits our country, I feel like small towns get hit the hardest because it's a lot of mom and pop sort of places, and sometimes those things just don't survive.
Some would say that white working class towns like Morton or where I'm from, they're not going to recover. Like, they're done. Do you feel when you're sometimes you're writing these songs, and I know that songwriting is to heal and to express and to share, but do you ever feel like sometimes you're documenting the end of something?
Oh, wow. I hope not. I hope I'm just documenting a time in history. I personally don't think small towns will ever die. You know, I see a lot of people that I grew up with that are now the adults in the community and have kids that go to the school. And I think as long as there are people who stick around, small towns will be around. They oftentimes have to drive a couple hours to find work,
right?
Which isn't easy, but I think there's a lot of pride in small town America. And so for that reason, I think small town America will live on. I hope I'm not documenting the end of it. That would be very sad. You know, I think that, like I said, I feel like it's the heartbeat of our country.
Hey, you know, we've had such a deep, heavy interview, which is great, and I think it's really beautiful, but you have such great songs that made me laugh so hard out loud. Do you mind ending with a song with a chuckle?
We'll leave you with something lighthearted.
All right, thank you.
One, two, three.
When you broke my heart, I wanted to cut the brake line on your four-wheel drive and poison your Pabst Blue Ribbon. When you drug my name all through the mud, I was dying to do the same, but I held my tongue, 'cause that ain't Christian. And you might be laughing now, but what goes around comes around. So I hope you have a daughter.
Daughter, by Brandi Clark, from her album Big Day in a Small Town. Charles Monroe Kane sat down with her. After the interview, Brandi played a few more songs, which are also pretty stunning. Check them out if you want at ttbook.org.
Yeah, karma's a bitch, so I hope you have a daughter.
Sometimes, recorded live in studio means you get to sit next to one of the great contemporary jazz musicians at his piano backstage. That's how Steve Paulson met Vijay Iyer. Here's a short excerpt from their encounter, which happened a few years ago, back when Steph Curry was dominating basketball with his three-point shooting.
We've been trained to believe that improvisation is rare and scarce and strange, rather than so omnipresent it's actually kind of banal. But when you bring that sensibility of, like, how do we do everyday life, then to your instrument, you just bring that same sensibility, like, well, what should I play next? Or what note should I play now? I wonder what happens if I put these two things together. you know, we could talk about a game of basketball, mm-hmm. all right, which is a highly regulated situation where every step you make and every move you make and how long you can hold the ball and whom you pass it to and when, and you're under surveillance, right? And there's only a handful of options you have at any moment. And yet the outcome of every game is unforeseen.
And the players we tend to celebrate the most are those who exercise the most creativity.
In the moment.
In the moment, yeah.
Those extreme conditions of...
And there are obvious benefits. You're harder to guard if you can do the unpredictable.
For example, yeah.
We've just witnessed Steph Curry.
Yes, indeed we have. It was the reason I brought it up. Right. So, you know, that's an example where you could say it's just a tremendous staged improvisation that has a lot of rules that govern the moment to moment, but also... From moment to moment, we don't actually know what's about to happen. Hmm. So music is not so different.
You are sitting at a piano right now. We were just talking about Steph Curry. He just had this amazing game last night. Yeah. Does anything come to mind musically? Just if you...
Oh, no.
Basketball? I'm guessing you're a basketball fan.
There was a tune I wrote. You know, actually, some years ago, I was invited. I don't know why, but I wrote a bunch of tunes for ESPN.
Really? ESPN? How did that...
That's right. That was Harvard professor?
Did no. they use them?
I am not aware of them having used them, but they liked them, and I think it was... I'm not sure what happened, but they commissioned a little, like, basically an album's worth of two-minute cues.
Wow. Do you remember any of those?
Yeah.
Could you play one?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was for a band. I mean, basically, uh-huh. they wanted something like small, fast, and loose. Something that sounded like improvisation. So I made one called The Prowl. I don't know if I can play it, really. But it was just about the way people move on the court. Huh. I can't play it, but I'll try. But I can't. Let's see.
Thank you.
That was just, that wasn't even really it. At some point I realized, oh, I don't actually know how this goes. So I just...
I guess it illustrates what we were just talking about. But I love, and you said that was, you called that The Prowl.
Yes, I did.
Which, I mean, I had the sense of there was stalking going on at the beginning, and then there was almost the pounce, and then this cacophony and of stuff happened.
Well, just sort of like rough and tumble atmosphere. Uh-huh. So it's sort of about finding a balance or a way to move with grace and fluidity in the midst of what seems like a stressful situation.
Celebrated jazz pianist Vijay Iyer. Steve Paulson sat down with him backstage at the Union Theater in Madison, Wisconsin. One improvisation deserves another, so before we go, here's the beatboxing father-daughter combo Nicole Paris and Ed Cage. This is recorded from the stage of our live show in St. Louis. Father-daughter beatboxing team Nicole Paris and Ed Cage.
Jamaica, stop.
Okay, well, I hate to tell you, but that's it for our show today, which comes to you from a bunch of music lovers in Madison, Wisconsin. This week, Mark Rickers has The Highwomen on repeat, the debut album of the all-women country supergroup. Joe Hartke's listening to the latest from Fiona Apple. Angelo Bautista is dancing in his kitchen to the new Dua Lipa album. Steve, the jazz fan, is listening to Alone Together and remembering the brilliant alto saxophonist Lee Konitz, who died last week from COVID-19. Shannon Henry Cliver's listening to a group she was supposed to see live, New Orleans rock band The Revivalists. Charles Monroe Kane, who put this hour together, is embarrassed to admit that he is listening to none other than Ted Nugent. Yes, and I am enjoying the sound of silence. Not the song, the real thing. From everyone here at To the Best of Our Knowledge, enjoy the music, whatever your taste.